you're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate, you'll be amazed at all these wild but true situations that others have found themselves in. Because on this show, you'll hear uncensored, unbelievable stories from the world of real estate. I'm Lee Brown. Let's dive right in.
Hello, friends. It's Lee Brown here, and you have arrived at Crazy Shit in Real Estate. Today, we're going to talk to Keith Chamish, and you'll be interested in his stories, both from the flipper perspective and then some advice from the mortgage side where he currently is a professional. If you were thinking of improving your credit or looking for some insights, this is the show for you. A little fun, a little education. Enjoy it. We'll see you on the other side. Before you get the rest of the story, I'd love to share a quick message from today's sponsor. Hey, y'all. Just going to take a quick break from this conversation to let you know about the sponsor of today's episode. That sponsor is, well, frankly, it's me. It's Lee Brown University. Look, it's no secret that real estate is crazy competitive, getting more so every day. And when the pie doesn't get any bigger, but the people wanting a piece of it do, you've got to figure out a competitive advantage. And that's why I created Lee Brown University. It's everything you need from soup to nuts, cradle to grave, point A to point B, whatever point B is. Each of you has different goals. So maybe you're a new to the career realtor, or you're a super experienced pro who can't figure out that next level. There's something in my course that's going to help you break through. It's designed for you before I even met you. So enroll in Lee Brown University today. You go to www.leebrownu.com and I'll see you there. Now back to this amazing content. Keith, welcome to Crazy Shit in Real Estate.
Good afternoon.
And I appreciate you bringing a little bit of the mortgage flavor to the show today. The money side is one that is often just as wild as the actual showing and selling of houses side. We don't talk about it that much. So give my listeners a little flavor for where you're located, a little bit about your background. Give them a little insight into Keith.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Keith Chamish with Motto Mortgage. We're a nationwide franchise that services the mortgage industry. We work with a lot of realtors across the country, and I'm located in Orlando, Florida, sunny Orlando.
Sunny and open Orlando. I mean, yay, Florida. You guys have an open economy.
Open economy. Yeah, things are booming.
So we are recording this, friends, at the end of March 2021. So hopefully whenever you're listening to it, it's open wherever you are. So Keith, what did you do before money lending? What was your profession of choice?
Yeah, so I actually started out in technology, but right before I got into lending, I was flipping houses. And I have some interesting stories maybe later I could share with that as well. So.
Oh, fantastic. Well, you know, we love crazy stories here on this podcast. It's the whole purpose of it is to tell the side of the business that HGTV never does delve into. So were you in Orlando at the time that you were flipping houses and fixing them up?
This was actually in St. Petersburg, Florida, a little down the road, about an hour and a half away from Orlando. Yeah,
I love St. Petersburg. When I was at Florida State, we did a little road trip at spring break down to Clearwater, St. Pete to go to the Salvador Dali Museum, which is one of the coolest art experiences ever.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right. So tell our listeners, you know, they like to hear the things that they cannot believe actually happened. You've got kind of a high bar to follow since we've had dead people in open houses. We've had a house that had the floor completely covered in shit. We've had porn shoots and sex and all kinds of things. What's happened in your world, Keith, that you just couldn't believe it happened and you managed to persevere?
Absolutely. So, I mean, this is, again, for flipping houses. I was an investor at the time, managing one of my first flips, and I hired a GC, and everything seemed to start out great. He got a crew in there, and everything's looking good. I wasn't on site that much. I was actually living in New York at the time, and I would come back and forth, so I couldn't be right on the ground. And as I see stuff, as I keep checking in weekly, the electricians are almost done with this particular house. It's a beautiful 1924 house. So,
oh, yeah,
beautiful wood floors. I mean, the floors alone, I spent like 10 grand just to restore them back to the vintage 1924 look of it. But not with this contractor. This was later on in the project. But as I noticed, we had to rewire the entire house. I came into the house one time and I noticed all the wiring was done, but I still didn't get the inspection done. I met the electrician there and he was telling me, because he was subbed out from the GC, that he hasn't gotten paid in a while. And I said, well, I don't know why, because I paid the GC. And I said, well, I'll speak to the GC. And the GC sort of was like ignoring me. Every time I come to the house, when I'm there, I see the electrician working and he's getting more and more upset, like he's not getting paid. And he's telling me that the issue is he can't even get the inspection done. He's trying to get the contractor wants him to get, we'll pay him after the inspection is done to make sure that he did his, you know, due diligence. But he can't get the inspection done because the GC had decided not to renew his insurance. So when they went to the town hall to say, hey, come out and inspect with us, they look up the GC on the permit. He wasn't insured at the time. And then every call would be like, yeah, I'm getting it. In the meantime, weeks are passing by. He still didn't get the insurance. I paid the electrician out of pocket. I said, listen, let's just move forward. I'll pay you. I'll figure it out with the GC. But at some point, he didn't get enough that he was expecting to get paid. And he actually pulled one of the main boxes off the house, the electric panel that he put on. That's like a $2,000 panel with all the labor that was involved with it. So that caused like a whole other set of issues. So I had to fire the guy, the GC, get a new GC on it. It's just be very careful when you hire a GC to make sure that, you know, you stay on top of them and be as close as possible to the job site. That's what I could say. And, you know, I wound up taking the guy to small claims court at the end of GC. I won the small claims court and he still wound up trying to put a lien on the house that I didn't pay him, even though I won a small claims suit against him.
So just to give you guys a little bit of the factoids on what Keith's saying there, if you've never done this before, GC's a general contractor. That's the dude who's in charge of all the people doing stuff. The electrical guy would be a subcontractor of the general contractor. So we talk about GCs and subs all the time, and you've heard your friends talk about it. So now you got a little bit of extra knowledge. But what Keith is mentioning there with the liens is one of the worst parts of doing real estate, because you may have paid somebody and they still file a lien on the property, which means that when you go to sell it, that's got to be satisfied. Well, if they were paid, you had better make sure everything's in writing. This is another reason to get receipts, keep receipts. Actually, a good use for Venmo and Zelle if you're going to be paying somebody, you've got a record of it. Too many people, and Keith, you can attest to this, they just make the payment, they don't keep the record of it, and then it winds up in court 2 and 3 years later, and there was no proof of it. So always keep proof. But I'm curious as to what happened with the house. I guess you had to get a new electrician. You had to get a new general contractor. How did you finish the project?
Yeah, great question. So I got a new GC. I got a new general contractor. I got a new electrician. And the project came out beautiful. It was a couple months behind. But that's why I left the buffer in. Whenever you buy a home, make sure you leave that extra buffer for something going sideways or south. And this way, you know, you still can make some profit. So that particular home, I think I paid about $230 and we wound up selling it for $400. I mean, you know, there was work put into it and it took some time. And at the end of the day, you know, I did have to deal with the, you know, with the title company when it came to closing with the lien. But all in all, it came out to a good ending.
Well, that's great advice to leave the buffer in. So if somebody is listening to this or watching this and they're new to investing, they're looking at their first project, when you're running numbers for a project house, how much of a buffer do you leave for time and how much of a buffer do you leave for unexpected expenses? What's the plug on your spreadsheet?
Yeah, absolutely. So I definitely leave 2 to 3 months open. You know, if you think it's a 2 to 3 month project, definitely double that. You know, if it's 6 months, you may not have to double that, but I'd say at least minimum 3 months. Because permits could take longer, inspections could take longer, and people are slow. There's holidays that pop up, parts get back ordered and they don't show up, they show up the wrong size. So at least 3 months buffer. And for money wise, I mean, I like doing a flip where I know I could double my money. So if I'm paying two, I want to sell it for four. I mean, some people work on much smaller margins. I know, you know, there's lately been people working on 20-30%. I think that's too tight to cut it, but everyone has to, you know, make their decision. I'd like to be able to have that larger buffer though.
Absolutely. And some people will take a smaller margin because they may intend to keep it as a rental, as a short-term rental, lots of different options with houses. But you got to remember, guys, that the whole purpose of buying investment real estate is the end goal being profitable to you, whether it's end goal in 6 months or it's a 20-year hold. And your realtor is going to give you great advice on that. If you'll just ask and let us know what your parameters are, we'll help you evaluate the numbers and the situation. And Keith did mention with cost overruns, materials, that's also a time overrun. You guys should know that we're recording this at the end of March 2021 when we're experiencing the wildest supply market I've ever seen, where you can't get a hold of anything and prices are just escalating. OSB and studs and plumbing materials, everything is through the roof because the supply chain was broken. So when you're paying attention to the overall economic picture, remember that it doesn't look like it impacts your day-to-day life until it does, and that's why you build in these buffers. Keith, let's jump over to the mortgage side of your business for a quick minute here. In dealing with homeowners and business owners that want to get mortgages for their properties, what are some of the wild things that you've seen in helping people make that happen?
Sure, absolutely. So can I just preference, though, I want to break down getting qualified for mortgage realty.
Absolutely.
Because there's always complications. People always call me, realtors call me, buyers call me. They're all like, you think it's a very complicated process. So I like to break it down to simply double CIA. So there's two C's, an I and an A. So just think of CIA, but there's two C's. So for the C's, we have the first thing you're going to need is to have a decent credit score. So we don't need you to have perfect credit, but today after COVID or pre-COVID or post-COVID, right now where we're at right now, we're at like about 620. So if they're at 620, they pretty much qualify for most loans. You know, there sometimes it could go a little lower, but you need to have at least a 620 today. And the other C would be cash. So a lot of buyers, they have income, they have good credit, but they don't have this cash, meaning like the funds or deposit for a down payment. Even the best programs today, besides if you're a veteran, because VA have loans that you could put 0% down. But for even an FHA loan, you need 3.5% down. So even if the home is $200,000 or $100,000, you need $3,500 just for the cost of the down payment. If it's obviously there's some closing costs involved too, that goes along with any sort of title work and the escrows that they will have to put up. And those will probably run about another 3.5%, 4.5%. So people need to keep that other C, got the credit, we got the cash. The next one is I, they need to have income. So some source of steady income, preferably 2 years in the same business line. We can, you know, work with self-employed people. The easiest ones are obviously people who are W-2 and pay stubs. And the last letter or item would be an asset, the actual value of the home. So if the home is worth $200,000 and that's what the appraisal is going to come in at, or that's what the market value is, then we are good to go. So this double CIA will get someone approved. If they don't have credit or bad credit, if they don't have a source of income, if they don't have the funding, or if the value of the home is not worth that money, then obviously there's going to be some sort of hurdle.
So on that last A there in your double CIA acronym, what are your best advice and best comments to a buyer who's in the market in 2021, where a lot of properties do not hit the appraised value, sellers want them to pay the difference. So they're basically paying cash above appraised value. We're seeing appraisal waivers. It's a wild, wild market. What's your best advice to somebody that's trying to structure themselves to win, but doesn't know what to do next?
That's a great question, a great point. And everyone's going to have to make their own decision. I mean, I would just say, if you love something, if you love the asset, the home, that it's going to work for you and your family, then it may be worth paying up. You know, if you have to come out of pocket something, even if the appraisal is a little lower, it may be worth it for you, your family, if it's closer to your work, if it's in a better place, better school. You know, if it's an extra $5,000, $10,000, in the big picture, you're going to get that money back. You know, its values come in a little. No one knows for sure, but, you know, you still will be in the home that you like as opposed to being someplace that you don't like. So I think taking that into consideration. I want to mention one more thing about appraisals. If you want to get an appraisal waiver, because a lot of times people have to compete and to get their offer accepted, if you have, it's not a cheap amount of money, but up to 30% of the down payment. So if the loan to value, the LTV, loan to value is only going to be 70%, then they likely will get an appraisal waiver. So if they have the ability to come up with 30%, not most people don't, but if you have that, then the appraisal waiver is usually, you know, kicks in. And they will be able to close a lot quicker. And the sellers are more anxious to deal with those types of closings. And your contract and offer will be accepted.
Awesome. That's great advice, guys, because we're seeing a lot of buyers that will just pay cash to go above the appraised value. They may not have thought about putting more down payment in just to get an appraisal waiver up front. So it's a great conversation to have with your mortgage lender, just like you have a conversation with your realtor about what you want, what you don't want. Talk to your lender. Don't just plug in your income and your debts and roll on. Ask questions, work through some scenarios, and think about the best thing possible for your future. I love that you mentioned that as an alternative way to look at things. So instead of you telling a story, actually, I want to ask you to give our listeners and viewers a piece of advice. What's the number one thing people can do to improve their credit score? And what's the number two thing? Just give them two great tips for making their credit score stronger.
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. I'd say the most important thing is that people keep their credit lines preferably lower than 35%. So if your credit line is $10,000, make sure at any given month you don't go over to $3,500 worth of credit that they give you. If you're over 50%, you're going to take a big hit. So if your credit line is $10,000 and you're spending $5,000 and it shows up in a credit report when your credit report's pulled, that's going to definitely affect your credit score. But that's a quick fix as long as you have the money. If you don't have the money, you're not going to be able to pay it back or pay it down. But if you at least have some money that you could pay down those credit cards, your score is going to jump up, you know, 20, 30 points by keeping the score under the 35% level of the credit limit.
And that can be the difference in interest rate and fees, guys, that those 20 points can make a difference at certain thresholds on the cusp of those numbers. So thank you for that great advice. What's the other thing you'd like to leave our audience with that they should know but probably don't know?
A lot of people are searching for cars and they're searching for homes at the same time. I tell people, if you can, if it's not too late, make sure you get the home locked up first before you get the car. Because as soon as you get the car, if you have a $500 car payment, that's basically $1,000 worth of liability. It's basically double whatever you pay per month. That's what you take against your income.
Huh.
So if you're making, you know, $50,000 a year, we could only utilize $25,000 of that towards all your liabilities, all your debt that you are owed. So that car is going to add up real quick. I suggest people, if possible, hold off on that purchase or the car lease. Car leases even count more because you're tied up for, you have no option to pay that off or pay it down. You sort of have to wait out the lease till the term. So if you could hold off on that car, even rent a car for 2-3 months before you purchase your home, I would do that if needed.
Oh, now there's a piece of advice that's rarely given, to rent a car for a short term if you have a car need. And if you're not paying attention out there, the National Association of Real Estate Brokers has a campaign going right now, House Before Car. So go check that out and think about the advice that you've gotten from Keith today. Keith, how can people reach you if they're interested in information about mortgages and pre-approval and finding a lender who's going to provide a personalized solution for them?
Absolutely. So I took a URL. It goes to my profile page on Motto, and that's meetthemortgageguy.com. It's very simple. Just meetthemortgageguy.com. That will follow me. You could reach me up and ping me there. You could get me on LinkedIn. Just put in Keith Chamish. But meetthemortgageguy.com will have all my contact, give you a little profile of me. That's a simple way to contact me.
And we know you're going to forget all of that. So never fear, because all of Keith's contact information is in the show notes for this episode. So you can reach out if you have mortgage needs or questions, or really just want to connect with somebody who's out there doing lots of things in real estate. Keith, I appreciate you coming on the show and giving us some interesting viewpoints in a couple of different places in real estate, because we could talk about this stuff for days and years and still not scratch the surface. And isn't that half the fun of it?
It's a big world out there.
Well, I appreciate you for coming on the show. Friends, make sure you follow up with Keith. And if you want more great stories from real estate, which also include a little education, make sure you subscribe for more. Give us 5 stars and we'll see you next time.
As always, I'm so super thrilled that you joined in for more crazy shit. And if you're a realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular human being who happens to have an unbelievable story that you need to tell the world about, or you just need to one up the story you just heard, then make sure to DM me on Instagram at Lee Thomas Brown, or tweet me at Lee Brown, or frankly, any social network where you hang out. I'm there. And if you had some fun, then you totally want to subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.